I'm going to start a little bit, actually, before Genesis was written in our sermon this morning. Everything that was written has a context. That's true for the Bible, too. Genesis didn't get written in a vacuum. Israel was surrounded by all kinds of other countries and cultures and belief systems. Mesopotamia, the Sumerians, Assyrians, Babylonians. Then there were the Canaanites right around Israel. They all had religions. They all had gods. Their gods had different names. But what they had in common was a hierarchical way of looking at life from people all the way up to the gods. And at the top, there were certain gods. They were all polytheistic. They believed in multiple gods. But under the god for their particular region or place, there would be a king. And underneath the king was a court. And at that level, there would also be priests who reported to the king. Underneath the court, king, the priests, would be the middle class, very small middle class in those days, artisans, merchants, craftspeople, a few of those, and then a huge number of peasants and slaves that would have been basically all of us. The whole world was peasants and slaves. In ancient Mesopotamian culture's way of looking at the world, in every case, the king was treated as divine or semi-divine. The king was understood to have been made in the image of the God who created the king and gave the king his power. And the word for image, the Hebrew word for it, was the tselem of the God. Only the king was thought to be made in the image, the tselem of that God. And there's a dividing line between the king and the rest of the human race. Peasants and slaves were not made in the image of the God. The king was a mediator through whom the blessings of the gods flowed to everybody else. Tselem is also the same word that's used for idols or image. Images or idols, all these religions had them, and they were controlled by the priests, and they were the way that you could access spiritual power. All these mysterious forces and powers that ruled the world and ruled your life. And the only way you could do that was through the king. The king is the one who could access spiritual powers, and the priests got their authority from the king, and the king got his authority from God, or maybe he himself was considered to be a god. Well, Genesis challenges all of this. The story of creation in Genesis offers a unique alternative view of God, mankind, and the natural world. In the Genesis narrative, it's the spirit of one God, only one God, who orders creation. And over the 7 days of creation in Genesis, God makes 7 speeches. He's placed in a royal role. God says, "Let there be light," and there was light. And that's how a king reigned, by royal proclamation. "Let there be taxes," and there were taxes. The power of the king to just proclaim the way things would be. Well, that's the power that God wielded in Genesis 1 when he spoke the world into existence by proclamation. Now, the Genesis doesn't just regard God as sovereign. It also describes him as generous and wise. And it says that he delights in all of his creation. God saw all that he had made, and it was very good, the Bible says. This idea of very good is that creation is filled with the glory, the character, the goodness, the generosity of the God who made it. And God created a special place on earth. If the whole earth was his temple, the Garden of Eden was his holy of holies, and he would actually be there himself. Adam would hear the sound of the Lord walking in the garden in the cool of the day, kind of like the earth, as I said, is his temple, and Adam and Eve are like priests in that garden with God, where God is there in person. And then when it comes to humans, things get very interesting in Genesis' description of creation, because it says in Genesis 1:27, "So God created mankind in his own image. In the tselem of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them." God created all human beings in his image. And this statement by the writer of Genesis is the single most world-changing statement about human dignity and worth and equality that's ever been recorded. This view of human dignity and worth has become the predominant view in the human race's understanding of itself, in contrast to the views of those other nations and their creation accounts in which humans were the dregs of the world. Imagine what this did to the hearts of peasants and slaves. Be told that it wasn't just the king that was made in God's image. They themselves were made in the image of the one great God. Male and female, slaves and peasants, made in God's image. Well, see, this is why issues of esteem are so important and painful in our lives, because we were made in the image of God. This is why it hurts so bad when someone disrespects your value as a human being, or doesn't recognize that you are Imago Dei, you are the Tzelem Elohim, the image of God. That's why when your worth, your dignity, your sense of value is damaged, it's so brutal. And that's also why the mistreatment of another human being is so serious to God. Look what it says in Genesis 9, "And from each human being too, I will demand an accounting for the life of another human being." Because each human is made in the image of God. God made mankind in his image. And so you've never looked at another human being, no matter how ragged they may appear to you, who is not made in the image of God, bears the stamp, the image of God. Another thing that's distinctive about Genesis, in every other religion in the ancient world, the idea of one divine king made in the image of God is traced back to the creation story, their creation myth. They believed the king was part of God's plan to reign over the earth. And the king was the son of God and was the way that gods rule. Israel, however, had a very different story. Israel did not even have a king for centuries of his existence. And the only way they got one was to beg for one to Samuel. And when they convinced Samuel to take this matter before God, God acquiesced to their desire for a king. And God made this statement. He says, "Give them a king, Samuel, because it's not you they're rejecting, it's me." God is saying that for them to choose to have a human king over them, to mediate between them and spiritual power, was a rejection of him personally. No one else had a story like this. The Bible brought to the world a revolutionary understanding of the human project. The fact that you were made in the image of God tells you not just about your worth and your value, but it also tells you about your role. It tells you about your destiny. In ancient times, there was no media, no internet, no papers. So this is what kings would do. Kings would set up images, idols, statues of themselves in the farthest flung corners of their empire. Now it's usually prints or paintings. So that everyone could know who is ruling in that area. If you walked, if you came into their empire, the first thing you would have seen would be an image of the king. Like in our day, here in Kentucky, you drive into the state, generally there's a big sign that says, "Kentucky, where we have this governor." And the governor's name is on the sign. Because he's like establishing the borders. This is my territory. This is where I have control. This is where I have authority. And it's that way politicians all over the world want people to know who's in charge. Well, the writer of Genesis is saying that just as a king would place images of himself around so that everybody could know who is king, so God has placed his own image into every human being so that creation can see who its ruler is. Now, this is a little different understanding, but notice the context of Genesis 1:27. Verse 26, 27, and 28 create a chiastic structure where the first verse and the last verse, 27 or 26 and 28, introduce and augment the significance of the verse in the middle. And so it's an A-B-A structure. And so then God said, verse 26, "Let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, so that they may rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals, and over all the creatures that move along the ground." And then you have the middle verse. So God created mankind in his own image, in the image of God he created them, male and female he created them. And then you have the repetition verse, verse 8. 28, "God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it, rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground." This is what it means to be made in the image of God. It's not about this quality or that quality. It's not about whether or not you have the ability to reason or that you have free will or something like that. It's about your role in the cosmic scheme of things. You were made to reign under God's character with God's power in God's stead for the benefit of the earth, so that all the earth could know whose reign it is under. You are made in the image of God. God's plan is to graciously share his power by creating a community of loving persons who would exercise dominion through his strength marked by his goodness. This is a benevolent rule. There's a tiny picture of this in the Garden of Eden, where we're told God brought the animals to the man to see what the man would name them. Now, God could have done that himself, but he's recognizing the authority, the significance of this one made in his image, and gives him the authority. Whatever the man called each living creature, that was its name. That's a little reflection of the Tzelem Elohim that's in you. How many of you have ever had a pet? When you have a pet, you just refer to it as, hey, you. You give your animals a name, and you love your animal. And our ability to have insight into their natures and even tame or train them, that's all a part of this naming deal. It's all a part of this divine Tzelem. That's why there's something in us that responds to the creatures God has made, because we're made in his image. We have a little bit of his heart in us. That's why when we go to the Rocky Mountains, or we go to the ocean, or we go to a place like Hawaii or to Alaska, or some beautiful place, we delight in the creation as well. It affects us emotionally and spiritually. It affects us powerfully to see God's creation and to embrace and experience God's creation. This idea, this image of God business, is that through you, through your learning, your culture, relationships, through technology, through the arts, through medicine, all these things are part of the project. It's our nature and calling to add goodness and beauty to families, neighborhoods, societies, nations, people who are hungry, the homeless, those who are uneducated, so that God's whole project becomes a glorious delight and generosity and righteousness to all who see it. Now imagine our Imago Dei Latin in terms of light. God is above, and the Bible describes his glory as just being incredibly bright. So glorious, so bright, you can't even look at it. It's so bright. And then God makes human beings alone, uniquely in his image. And his glory shines down on us and through us. It's God's intention from the beginning, and it will be God's intention again at the end, that we're like prisms through which the light of God shines and then dispenses this beautiful light of God all over creation. The plan of Genesis is that God will reign over earth through these little human creatures made in his image, who bring God's good rule, God's good reign down to earth. And then in turn, the glory, joy, the gratitude, the goodness of God in us is reflected back to God in praise and worship. You were made. Your destiny is to reflect the holy reign of God to the earth, to care for all of creation, particularly to care for other human beings the way God would want you to care for them. And then to gather all the goodness and delight from the earth and put it into words and offer it back to God in praise and worship. That's the story of Genesis before sin entered into the picture and corrupted everything. And that's our story when all things in heaven and earth are restored. We have plenty of time, and we will talk about in other sermons, to talk about sin and its impact in our lives and what it's done to each one of us. But this morning, let's think about God's original intention and who we were created to be, and then what we will be again, what will happen again when everything comes to fruition as God has planned it, when, as Paul says in Romans 8, creation itself is liberated from its bondage to decay and brought into the freedom and glory of the children of God. Your destiny is to contribute more creative, God-given goodness to the earth, more than you can even imagine, then to offer more earthly joy and gratitude to God than you can currently contain. And at the end, when God's plan is finally brought to complete fruition, you will be a king. The reign of God will flow through you to enhance the earth. You will be a priest. The praise and glory of the earth will flow through you to be offered to God. Revelation 22, 3 through 5 talks about this. Actually, all of Revelation 22 talks about this in, obviously not literal, but in very descriptive terms, beautiful terms, poetic terms. John says that the city of God coming out of heaven to this new earth on which we will live. And he says, the throne of God and of the Lamb will be in the city, and his servants will serve him, and they will reign forever and ever. To reign is not some static thing where you're just stuck on a boring throne. It means you'll be strong, powerful, creative in the making of good and the achieving of value, of beauty, delight, humility, and joy. That's the destiny that lies before you in eternity. You were made to be a king and a priest for the good of all creation. God has graciously bestowed on us his own image and given us a glorious destiny. So, don't get tired. Don't get frustrated and want to quit. Keep carrying on, doing good, being good, growing more and more into the likeness of Jesus, because something far better than we could ever imagine awaits those of us who receive eternal life from Jesus Christ. Stand as we sing.